You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Absolutely thrilled to be here with you guys, and thank you all so much for your wonderful support and being a part of what we're doing here on the podcast. Many thanks to all the people out there that have been spreading the word and letting other people know. It's really cool to keep meeting new people and having emails from all over the world. So thank you all so much for that. We got an amazing show coming up for you, but first of all, I'd like to say if you have an encounter or experiences of your own with the paranormal and would like to be on the show, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to get in touch with you, and we'll see when we can get you on the show. But today's show is really special. I've got author Kevin Foster joining me from Massachusetts. He's author of Strange Days in the Hockomock Swamp. And that is a book that is available on Amazon, so definitely check it out. But I'm really excited to have this discussion because it's just an amazing amount of material here. So without further ado, let's get to it. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks, Brent. It's nice to be on the show.
Yeah, it's a real thrill, man. I got to tell you, Hockomock Swamp is a new thing to me. And, I like to think that I got my finger on the pulse of things, but I was really thrilled to hear about this and to hear about what you've been doing and as well as what you got planned. I mean, this is an exciting deal.
Yeah, well, Hockomock Swamp is, as you said, in Massachusetts, a little bit south of Boston. It's a 17,000-acre wilderness area that has all kinds of cryptid stories that come out of it, UFO stories, orbs, ghosts, thunderbirds, large devil dogs, large black snakes, you name it, it's there. I mean, it's just a bizarre place.
And you had mentioned that it's part of the Bridgewater Triangle, and I thought that was fascinating. And it seems like these triangle areas are just these, like, I don't know what like macrocosms of or microcosms of this incredible amount of energy and activity.
It just seems like the name of your show, they're like portals,
right?
You know, some other dimension that all these creatures are coming out of, and you know, some pretty strange things.
Right. Exactly. So, can you kind of take us back to how did this journey start for you? When did you first start looking into the Hockomock Swamp?
Well, actually, it started probably over 20 years ago. I had two boys growing up that I usually had here on Cape Cod for the summer, and then I'd go camping with them, take them through Maine and New Hampshire and Like I said, about 20 years ago, I was taking them back, and I was staying at Cotscook State Park, which is about three-quarters of the way up the coast of Maine. And we decided one day to go out for a hike along the water, and we probably went about 3 miles, and then the trail went up this embankment into the woods. My kids were dragging behind. They were kind of tired, so I went up ahead, and I get to the top of the bank, and I look down, and about 300 yards down the trail was this black thing sitting in the middle of the trail. And at first, of course, I thought it was just a black bear. And then this thing actually just stood up. It had a small red squirrel in his hand. I could see that. And it just walked straight off into the woods. I was stunned. I mean, I was amazed.
How big was it? Yeah.
It was probably about 8 feet.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it was big. I knew it wasn't a bear.
Wow.
And it really freaked me out. And, of course, I had my two boys with me and a dog. So I quickly turned around and got them out of there and said, I'm tired. Let's go back. So that was my first encounter. And actually, I dropped them off at their mother's house. And I continued. I was spending a week camping. I went to my brother's house up in Vermont. And again, I was walking down a snowmobile trail, and my dog just kind of started going nuts. He was whining, and he was putting his tail between his legs. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? And the next thing I know, I hear these deep guttural growls and grunts coming from this huge spruce tree.
Oh, man.
And I'm curious, and I just start walking forward towards it. And all of a sudden, the tree starts shaking violently. And I saw this big, huge, hairy arm from about the shoulder down to where the wrist was. And it was shaking it, and it started screaming at us.
Oh.
And the next thing I know, my dog turned around and took off into a cornfield that was off to the right. And I was scared, honestly. And
I just
took off after the dog. And I kept looking over my shoulder to see if the thing was coming at me.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God it didn't.
That is terrifying. Oh, my God.
So after those two encounters, which happened pretty much within a week, you know, I started getting interested in this story. And I should also say that night at my brother's house, I was looking out the picture window because my dog was going nuts, barking out the window. And I actually saw these two orbs flying around the field out there. And there was this big black bush in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And when the orbs disappeared into the woods, all of a sudden the black bush stood up and walked off into the trees.
Oh, my God. Do you think this thing might be the same one that maybe it followed
you? No, but I thought it was awfully strange that, you know, I believed in Bigfoot and Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought there was something out in the West Coast and after Boggy Creek, you know, I thought it was down south.
Mm-hmm.
But I never expected to see him up in Maine and Vermont.
Yeah. Man. Wow.
So after those encounters, I really got, you know, into reading about them and getting online and reading stories. And that's kind of what brought me to the Hockomock Swamp, because all kinds of weird stories come out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got me into my book, Strange Days in the Hockomock Swamp. I decided to take all the accounts I read and, you know, things that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I made up this fictional story about a girl that gets dragged in the woods by a Sasquatch. And a hunter comes along to rescue her. And then they fight these cryptids to get out of there.
Oh, man. That sounds absolutely fascinating. And I got to tell you, it does seem to be very often the case that once somebody experiences one thing, it's like the floodgates kind of open, you know, and more things start jumping out. And it sounds like by what you're recounting to us, that's kind of what happened. You saw that thing on the trail. And then from after that, it was like, all of a sudden you were going to experience a whole lot more.
Yeah. I've, actually seen UFOs. I've seen ghosts.
Yep.
You know, I'm still waiting to see what they call the Puckwudgie, but there's a lot of stories of those in the Hockomock Swamp, too.
Oh, man. Yeah, they're apparently really nasty things.
Yeah, yeah. I actually have one in my book. It shoots fire out of its fingertips and static electricity, and it's pretty creepy.
Yeah, no doubt. So, kind of, if you wouldn't mind, kind of explain to our listeners what is the Hockomock Swamp? What is some of the stories coming out of there?
Well, the Hockomock Swamp has had stories for like centuries. It goes back to the Wampanoag Native American Indian tribe. That actually named it the Hockomock, which means the place where spirits dwell. And then when the early settlers moved into the area, they dubbed it the Devil's Swamp. So that kind of tells you something right there about, you know, the nature of this area. But there have been numerous sightings. There was a trapper that was running his line in a canoe, and he just got the eerie feeling that he was being watched, and he turned around and looked up, and on the embankment was a huge brown, hairy Sasquatch.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
And stories of hunters that have gotten chased out of the woods there from running into Bigfoots. There's stories of people seeing thunderbirds overhead and pterodactyls flying around. There's so many stories of ghosts. I mean, people seeing, like, Native Americans in canoes and, you know, just the ghostly figure and of canoes going through the swamp, and people, Native Americans dancing around fire rings and just, like I said before, the Pukwudgies, which is like an elf-like creature that sometimes is naked, sometimes they have a loincloth on. Sometimes they're carrying weapons like small bows and arrows. And, you know, there was one guy that was out walking his dog early one morning. It was just, you know, just dusk. And he saw this Pukwudgie standing under a streetlight. And it started, like, communicating with him. It was, like, trying to call him over. And it was, I don't know, saying something weird like, E-Y-E, E-Y-E, and you know, it was almost like a Native American language, he said.
Wow.
And he didn't hang around too long, he ended up turning around and taking off with his dog. But
yeah, that's a little terrifying, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
This is an amazing place, and it seems that, as we were talking, I mean, the First Nations really knew their land. And I wonder, did the settlers get the knowledge of that swamp from the First Nations, or did they find out the hard way? You got to wonder.
I think they found out the hard way, because actually they had what they call the King Philip's War, which when we first came over here, we ended up actually having wars in the swamp with the Native Americans.
Oh.
And they used to actually hide out in the swamp, though they didn't really want to be there, but it was a safe place to get away from the settlers at the time. But, you know, there's been stories of ghosts because of the wars that went on that people are seeing, you know. Just some really odd things.
Right, it really is. But now, is it really common for people going into the swamp to experience a lot of strangeness, or is it, I mean, I'm basically wondering how prominent is the activity in this area?
Well, there is a lot of it, but then you have people that I've seen, you know, saying, oh, I've lived on the edge of the swamp for years and I've never seen anything. And, you know, you have your skeptics out there.
Sure.
You know, but like I said, there's a lot of stories that come out of there, and you know, all over the country, all over the world, of similar things, and you got to scratch your head and say, "Well, there's got to be something out there."
Right, exactly. You know, I've got kind of a theory about that, because it seems to me, and I don't know if this is true or not. This is just me on the outside looking into a whole lot of stories and information that has come to me through doing the show, but it seems to be that paranormal events and activity, and I'm talking about, you know, the whole spectrum, not just ghosts, but, you know, the cryptids and perhaps even the UFOs, they seem to somehow become more, I don't know, available to people that have that open mind. But, you know, skeptics can go into those same places, like you were saying, somebody living right on the edge of that, on the edge of that, and never seeing anything. But then, you know, you go a block away and some guy's just, you know, dealing with stuff all the time. And it seems, yeah, for some reason, it seems to have something to do with the observer as well. And I'm not trying to, you know, say that somehow they are projecting this or creating this or imagining this. I'm just saying that it does seem to involve both parties on a very fundamental level. And I'm trying to understand that because, you know, like paranormal researchers could go into Alcatraz with, you know, that and get amazing activity. And then a skeptic could go into that same place and spend, you know, a night or two nights or whatever and get absolutely nothing. And it seems definitely to have something to do with the observer.
I would agree with that. And I think, as you said, skeptics go in there, they don't see anything, but they're going in there because they're hoping not to see anything.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, they're holding onto a paradigm, that's for sure.
Right. But then there's the skeptic. I started out as a skeptic when it came to ghosts. I mean, for years we had stories of a house. We had a house in Concord that we got from my grandparents, and for some reason all my sisters would see this ghostly woman in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me, my brother, my father always dismissed it. We never saw it.
Right.
And I actually had a girlfriend over there one time, and she kept saying to me, "Stop poking me in the back." And I'm like, "I'm not poking you in the back." And then all of a sudden she looks up on the stairs and she's talking to someone, and I'm like, "Who are you talking to?" You know, and still I was a skeptic, mm-hmm, until I went over to Germany and saw this ghostly woman floating down the Mosel River, and I had two other buddies sitting next to me, and they said, "Do you see what I see?" And I'm like, "Yes, I do."
So, and suddenly it's real.
Yeah, but I was a skeptic, but now I'm a believer, so.
And is that still the only ghostly experience you've had, or have you had more?
Yeah,
since?
That's the only ghost I've actually seen.
Okay, gotcha. But have you experienced other ghostly events?
I've been to a house one time where, I don't know, there was strange knocks.
Oh, okay, sure.
On the walls, you know, and it was too loud to be, you know, rats or anything scurrying around the house, but...
Right.
And I was alone in the house at the time, and I thought that was odd, but I didn't see anything.
Sure, but I still think that that's profound activity.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, you know, and I am planning to be doing some expeditions into the Hockomock Swamp, and I'm actually a videographer by trade, so I'm hoping to get some footage of these different cryptids, and I'm hoping to see ghosts. I don't know if I'll be able to pick it up on film, but...
Sure.
You know, I'm just waiting for the weather to warm up a little bit more, and I'll be in there.
So it's going to be this year you're going to be doing this?
Yeah. Actually, I had planned to do it last summer, and I did something to my arm, and I couldn't be hiking and kayaking. I'm going to be doing some kayak excursions in there. And,
right.
And with three buddies of mine, we'll be walking around, and we actually have a couple drones, too.
Oh, very nice.
So we'll be using the drones and... hopefully be in the right place at the right time to find something and have some kind of proof.
So do you have an opinion?
For those skeptics?
That would be great. I love nothing more than hearing stories of skeptics being, encountering the things that they can't explain. I just think those are fascinating and wonderful because, you know, and I repeat it all the time on the show, but I think the paranormal is incredibly profound, and it demonstrates fluid nature to our reality. You know, we're so accustomed to living in the three dimensions in this box that, has been created whether by us or whatever. But I love the fact that these things happen and it changes the paradigm. It just changes the game completely. And I think that's powerful.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone says we need the body of a Bigfoot to prove it. Well, I don't think we need a body, but who's to say that there haven't been bodies? Because I really believe in the past there have been.
Yeah.
I think the government is in on something. I mean,
sure.
They have a polite missing 411, all these people disappearing in state parks and national parks.
Mm-hmm.
There's something going on there, too, whether it's UFOs or Sasquatch. And then, you know, you hear the stories of these black op groups that are sent in to kill Sasquatches that are,
yeah,
taking people.
Yep. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up, we're going in.
There are stories of black helicopters coming out of the Hockomock too.
Oh, okay.
A lot of sightings of those.
Well, you know, it seems to me that you know, I think it's kind of like Tesla said, once we start investigating the non-physical, we'll make more progress in however period of time than we have up to that point. And I think he's right. I think there's a lot to be learned by this, that these aren't just strange phenomena that are like glitches. They are the breadcrumbs. They are the proof that there's so much more, and that there's a whole dynamic nature to our reality. And I think it's very powerful, but there seems to be, as you're saying, those people or groups that are so focused on keeping us in our, three dimensions and, getting back into our cubicles, so to speak,
Yeah. Yeah. Keep us in the dark, so to speak. And, the men in black, you hear stories of them coming along and squashing the details of sightings, and, it's just, I don't know, there's something behind it all.
Right, and you had referenced portal, that this area could be a portal. Now, do you think that perhaps a lot of these phenomena or beings are indeed multidimensional and maybe utilize portals to go between, or do you have an opinion on that?
I was kind of skeptical about that in the beginning. I didn't believe really that Bigfoot was interdimensional. But, now with all these stories of these creatures coming out of the Hockomock Swamp, I'm starting to think that it is some kind of vortex there that, they're slipping in and out of. And I mean, the swamp itself is huge. I mean, it's big enough to hide things in there. And but I am starting to believe that there are portals.
Yeah.
That are, and the whole 411 phenomenon, too. It's one of the theories is that people are disappearing into portals, and then we never find them. I'm sure you've heard that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that there's strong possibility for that, at least being the case for some of them. I got to admit that, I can't get my head around the 411 stuff. I have no doubt that these cases are very valid and real. It's just, I just keep wondering, what does this all mean? What does it mean? And what is it? What is the big picture for something like this? And it's just really, really mind-boggling.
I actually ended up talking to an individual that had something similar to that, and he actually came out of it. He said that he was up in Maine, and this is when he was a kid. He was out with a bunch of kids, trekking through the woods, and all of a sudden they started hearing like Indian drums in the woods. And he said somehow he got separated climbing up this mountainside from the rest of the group. I think there was like 8 kids with him. And he said that when he gets to the top of this ridge, excuse me a minute, my dog is right next to me going nuts.
That's okay.
Anyway, he got up to the top of this ridge, and he said there was this horrific screaming and this really agitated creature on top that actually was throwing stones down at him, and he could just see, like, the peak of its head. And he said, but he couldn't hear anything. He couldn't hear anything in the woods, nothing. And to make a long story short, he ended up getting out of there, and he thought it was, like, I don't know, a five-minute episode. But when he got back, he found the group of kids he was with, and they're like, where were you? And he's like, what do you mean? And he's like, we've been looking for you for hours. We've been calling out for you. You never responded. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I thought I was gone for like 5 minutes. Wow. I never heard these people screaming for me. And he said, and I felt like I was in a weird place. He said, and then I just, like, popped out of it. And he said, and I found my friends. And I don't know. It's like he slipped into a portal, he was telling me.
Right, you know, and those stories come our way, too, on the show. Just to paraphrase, one, we had somebody call in and tell us about this experience they had where they found this weird area that shouldn't have existed, like the roads that they followed to get there should not have existed, but they did. And they went back to this place numerous times, but every time they went there, there was this strange fog that would roll down from the hill that they were on. It was like an incline. And they said when they, you know, it was at night, and when they turned on their flashlights, the fog would retreat from it. And they kept repeating that experiment over and over. It was like there was a sentience to this fog or something. Very strange, but they said that a couple of them finally got up the nerve to walk into the fog that kept coming towards them. And they said once they were in the fog, they were suddenly in a field, a grassy field somewhere else completely. But they, and they turned around and went back, and they were back in that, you know, fog where they had parked their car and stuff. So they said that eventually they lost that place due to logging and stuff. But what an incredible possibility, you know?
Yeah. I mean, somebody actually came back out of it. That's really bizarre.
Well, you know, and I wonder about that. Like when you hear stories about time slips, Kevin, I mean, that may very well be, you know, a little, you know, dashes through a portal, and I guess that makes perfect sense, and it probably sounds overly obvious, but I think that, you know, we probably do experience portals in our life, and maybe perhaps that's some of this Mandela stuff that people talk about too.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, areas like this, I think, have profound potential impact for us in our understanding of the universe we live in.
Yeah.
So now you are, of course, have had your own experiences. Now, do you also get people telling you stories of their very own that they've experienced in that region?
Yeah, it's funny because I actually go up and visit my two sons live in Maine. I visit them a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're in their late 20s. And I just remember I was spending a weekend at my son's house, and there was a big bonfire up there, you know, they were having a party. It was July 4th weekend. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, they probably had like 40 different people over. And we're just sitting around a campfire. And of course, I start telling my Sasquatch stories. And next thing I know, there's like 8 different people from Maine telling me either their encounters or, you know, or my uncle has this one that lives out on his place in Maine. And there's a old abandoned Air Force base near Aroostook County, Maine, where one of these kids actually went into it, and he scaled the fence, and he was walking around, and they were finding 3-toed footprints.
Oof.
They were going through the catacombs of this place, and he said that all of a sudden they heard this baby crying.
Uh-oh.
And, of course, one of the kids, other kids, perks right up and said, that wasn't a baby crying, that was something trying to entice you in there, like a Sasquatch or an alien or something. But there was, like I said, about 8 different stories that I heard all coming out of Maine of just different people running into these creatures.
Yeah.
Which dates back hundreds of years. People, you'd hear the wild men stories coming out of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, and you know, these hairy beasts roaming around there and hunters disappearing and You know, just weird, bizarre phenomenon going on.
Yeah, and that happens quite a bit. I mean, once it's kind of like the nobody wants to be the first one to dance. But once somebody hits the dance floor, suddenly everybody's got something to contribute. And I think that that's cool. And I've noticed that, you know, even in terms of doing the show, that it used to be really hard for me to get people to contribute. And I was always like, well, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? And it finally, you know, it just kind of snowballed off of one person calling in and during my live show and starting to talk. And then more people call in. And I just think it's, people aren't used to feeling safe talking about these things yet. It's more common now, but I think it's still hard for some people to share these things because, well, I imagine partially, or at least in a large part, because they don't understand it. And how do you explain something you can't understand?
Yeah, I mean, when I first had my encounter up in Maine, like I said, I was actually trying to dismiss it. I was trying to make up all these things about, you know, it wasn't a Sasquatch, and it was this, it was that. And then I had the second encounter 5 days later, and I finally just said to myself, no, that's what I saw. This is out there.
Wow.
They're real, you know? And I think for every story that comes on the air or you hear about, there's probably a dozen more that you don't hear about, the people that don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So how many more stories are really out there?
Yeah, well, you know, exactly.
People not coming forward.
Uh-huh. Okay, everybody. I think it's time we got to take a break. So don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. All right, everybody, and we're back, at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up. We're going in. Now, do you ever listen to Sasquatch Chronicles?
Yeah, actually, I was supposed to be a guest on there a month ago, but I don't know, something happened. It fell through.
Oh, okay. Well,
but yes, I do listen to it.
Yeah, Wes is a good friend of mine, and I am always amazed, and in many ways he was a big inspiration for me to start this show. But I am just amazed that for all the years he's done this show, he has no trouble finding people that are willing to come forward and do it. But, I mean, that just goes to show you how many people are actually experiencers. And I think that a lot of people on the outside looking in like to think that, well, it's just maybe some screwballs and stuff that are having some, you know, maybe too much to drink or it just happened to one guy or two guys. But that show's been on for years and years.
Well,
and he's, got more.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just that he never runs out of guests that want to share their experiences.
Well, I was just going to say real quickly that, you know, you brought up Sasquatch Chronicles, and my next door neighbor knocked on the door the other day, and she's telling me, oh, I hear you wrote the book, Strange Days in the Hockomock Swamp. And right away she says, you know, I was just on Sasquatch Chronicles a couple months ago talking about my experiences at our place up in Maine. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know, this is my next door neighbor that's had encounters too.
Wow.
So,
yeah, and you would have never have known that, you know. She lived right next to you and never thought to say, hey, this is what I had happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So
you said that you have seen UFOs. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
One was up in New Hampshire. I was hiking along a trail, and it was like just this huge, well, I was actually up on top of one of the mountains. I forget the name of the mountain. But there was this valley below, and I just saw this silver disc-shaped object go sailing through the valley.
Oh, wow.
You know, very fast.
Uh-huh.
I also know a couple people that live on the coast of Maine that have told me they had encounters up there, and I didn't believe them at the time, and I was on the coast of Maine, and I saw something come up out of the water and fly away.
Oof. That is so profound.
And then the other time was, it was probably like 20-some years ago. I actually briefly had a house up in Maine, too, at one point. And at night I was out smoking a pipe, and I looked up, and all of a sudden I just saw this, what I thought was an airplane flying along up in the air, but all of a sudden it just started doing this zigzagging motion through the, you know, the sky, and then in a blink of an eye, it was gone. It just took off.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, yeah. And again, I was a skeptic. Like I said, I didn't believe in UFOs until I actually saw them.
But they believed in you.
Yes, they did. I still haven't seen aliens yet, but I'm waiting for that one.
Oh, really? Yeah, see, I've seen a UFO as well. And interestingly enough, I was looking through night vision binoculars, and I saw it emitting light, and you know, with this, you know, the saucer, like it was a saucer, and it was emitting light in the infrared binoculars, like it had flashing lights on it and such. And as soon as I lowered the binoculars, it didn't exist. And then I looked back in the binoculars, it was there. Lowered them, it didn't exist. And so somehow it was cloaked. So when you say that it just suddenly disappeared, I often wonder if maybe what's happening is that they're going, oh no, someone's looking at us. Let's, you know, switch to you know, stealth mode here. And they just hit a switch and suddenly they are absorbing the light spectrum, or, you know, however it would work, that we can't perceive them.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned the stealth mode, because also last summer when I was up visiting up in Maine, there was this weird storm that came, and there was this cloud that came across the skyline towards us, and it was emitting thunderbolts of lightning, like 12 at a time coming out of this thing, and it was an awfully strange shape. I mean, it was like you turned an octopus sideways, and lightning bolts were coming out like 12 at a time.
Jeez.
And it was like this triangular shaped cloud, which you've never seen something like that. And I thought it was at the time a UFO coming overhead, and it was hiding in some kind of, you know, stealth type of cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just really, really weird. And I had my video camera at the time, and I'm still kicking myself that I didn't videotape it. And my son was even saying, Dad, go in the house and get your video camera and tape this. And I'm like, no.
Oh.
And I should have, because this was the oddest thing I have ever seen. And, you know, I know it was a UFO.
Right, right. And that's the tough part, too, is like, so my experience was in these infrared binoculars, but there was no record function on them. So, you know, I only wish that had been possible, because, you know, my sighting would be, I really strongly believe, one of the more profound sightings and recorded footage ever, if I had had the ability to record it. But since I didn't, you know, it's just a personal experience. And it's something I wish other people could have seen, because I think that, you know, it could both validate a lot of people that have been, you know, trying to, you know, inform the public that they're out there, and it might, you know, actually cause some skeptics to think twice about the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So you had this experience. How long did it last?
Well, the funny thing was, this went overhead, and then there was like more that came through.
Oh my God.
And yeah, and that's why I thought they were UFOs, and they were actually heading from inland out to sea. And I've always heard stories off the coast of Maine of supposedly underwater, you know, UFO bases. And of course there was the Shag Harbor incident.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I know the name. I can't remember the specifics of it though.
It was off the tip of Nova Scotia, which like is close to where the area was that I was up in Maine. You know, it wasn't too far off. So, mm-hmm. It just makes you wonder, you know,
yeah.
If there are bases out there.
I think there are, you know, and the other thing is I live in the north tip of Idaho, and it's surprising the number of people that I've bumped into. And, you know, if the topic should ever come up, there's so many people up here that have also witnessed things. And so for some reason, this area seems to be a hotspot for UFO activity, although it's very, very lightly reported, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what's going on up here.
I was just going to say, a lot of those stories out of the Hockomock Swamp, too, of seeing UFOs, there used to be a place called the Raynham Dog Track. You know, you'd have hundreds of people sitting out there watching the dogs run around. Mm-hmm. And the Hockomock Swamp sits on the other side of this racetrack. And there were like hundreds of people that saw this huge UFO go over there one time, you know.
Oh my God.
And there are always stories of orbs off in the distance flying through the trees. And I think it was back in the early 80s or late 70s, there were actually two Channel 5 news reporters that were going to a story, and they saw this huge triangular-shaped UFO fly right over them.
Wow.
And, you know, so...
So what do you think of that theory that, that a lot of people have, that maybe these triangular ones that people see every once in a while are actually man-made, reverse-engineered or something? Do you think that's possible?
I think that's possible, yeah, but I don't think everything we're seeing out there is from us. I think
right.
there are still, you know, extraterrestrials coming here or are still here.
Yes.
And, you know, and they're being seen too. But, yeah, I believe the government is managed to pull that one off too, and that's some of the stuff we're seeing.
Right. Yeah, I think that's really, I think it's possible because we've had people on the show like Raymond Schmidt, who's a well-known researcher of the New Mexico crash site in Roswell, and just the stories he shared that he got from family members of the people that were there, and some amazing. It's more than anecdotal evidence. I mean, he's really they've been doing excavations and stuff of that site. And, you know, just to hear his stories and what he has to share on it, it's like, well, for sure this happened because there's so many witnesses, so many people that experienced it, and then the information that he's gathered. So I don't know if we'll ever get to the point of disclosure, and perhaps it doesn't even matter because I think that, you know, with all the people that have experienced it, and, you know, I think more and more people are opening up to the idea that I think it'll disclose itself eventually.
Yeah, with, you know, everyone has a cell phone now with video yeah. capability and pictures, and it's just rampant now that a lot of pictures and videos are coming out of these things.
Yeah, it really is, and unfortunately there's also plenty of people doing hoaxes, which doesn't, you know, that doesn't help us at all because, of course, that's what the skeptics, you know, grab onto. Well, this guy with his computer made the Death Star appear over the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's like, well, yeah, I know.
Right.
So that's the tough part is being able to validate that as well. But, you know, I think it's just a matter of time. But getting what I was trying to get to earlier is that I really do believe that there are, you know, advanced projects. And, of course, the disclosure movement where, you know, they'd had the press club meeting in 2010 or 2011 with Stephen Greer and his group. And some of those witnesses, I mean, those are people that were very, very professional, very well educated and aware pilots and you know, military personnel of high ranking. Why would they do that? Why would they come out and do that if they didn't firmly believe that what they were doing was important to share this information and to bring this knowledge out?
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, we really don't know much about our world. And I think that if it all just became suddenly clear, all of the things that happen around us and around our awareness, I think most people would probably either faint or die of fright, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, the 411 phenomenon and David Pilates can't even get any information from the parks. There's definitely a big cover-up going on, and, you know, they say, well, it's because if the truth came out, people aren't going to go to these places anymore.
Sure.
You know, if people find out there's Sasquatches that eat people, then, you know, how's that going to do to the recreation business out there in the state parks?
And, probably kill
the logging industry.
Right. It would probably kill the mood for camping pretty quick. But I think that I have to wonder, though, speaking of missing, has there been a lot of people missing around the Hockomock Swamp?
Yes, there has. And actually, there was a recent one, I think it was about 6 months ago. I don't have the name on the top of my tongue, but a guy in his mid-50s, I think, decided to go for a walk in there, and he just parked his car on the side and went in one of the trails and never came back. And they're still scratching their head, trying to figure out what happened to him.
Oh, no. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, there are other stories, too, that come out of there, people disappearing. And, I mean, and they go back for centuries, too, people disappearing in the swamp.
Yeah. That's pretty disturbing. I'm not chuckling because it's funny. I'm just like, it just boggles my mind that all this stuff is going on around us. And, you know, there's, you know, obviously groups of us that are starting to really dig into it and try to figure out what the truth is. But I think there's a lot to be learned about this kind of thing. But now on your expedition, when you go out there, what is your plan of attack? I mean, if you can kind of paraphrase it.
I would truly like to be the guy that captures Sasquatch on film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, most people think, again, that we need a body to prove this, but I just want to be in the right place at the right time to get that.
Yeah.
Or a Thunderbird, or, you know, the stories of the Pterodactyl, or the Pakwudgie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be something to get that on film. And, you know, like I said, we'll be bringing drones in there, too. And I've seen actually some drone footage where people are just flying their drones, and all of a sudden they bring it back and later discover, oh, my gosh, I have some kind of creature in there and
yeah,
in my footage. And, you know, I'm just hoping to get something like that.
That would be good.
Yeah, I'm looking into whether we can go actually camping in this area, because you used to be able to drive down 495 here and just park your car and walk into the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's all these 12-foot-high fencing up there with no trespassing signs on them, and it makes you kind of wonder why.
Right, yeah.
You know, who knows, you know, who's behind this?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot of motivations for many people to try to keep things quiet. But, yeah, I really hope that works out well for you. We just got a few minutes left, and obviously, Kevin, you're going to have to come back because we got a lot more ground to cover, and unfortunately, I don't think we even scratched the surface in this first endeavor into it. But I definitely want you to take some time to let people know how to stay in touch with you and where on Amazon to find your book and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I do have a Facebook page, Strange Days in the Hockomock Swamp, and I'm putting updates up there because I'm actually going to be guest speaking at a couple different places, hopefully over the summer if they don't get canceled. We're still waiting to hear about that. But,
sure.
You can go to my Facebook page or just type in Strange Days in the Hockomock Swamp in the Amazon book section, and you'll go right to my book.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I really applaud your efforts thus far, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more, obviously, about what you have done and what you are doing, but especially about those expeditions. That, to me, is really exciting because I think it's pretty clear that no official group is going to, you know, spend the resources or time to put this on the map, so I think it's up to people like us to do it, and I'm really thrilled to hear that you're going to be doing an expedition or two out there, and I really hope you find something. That'd be amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's only 45 minutes away from my house, so hopefully this summer I'll have quite a few expeditions in there.
Well, fantastic, brother. And thank you once again for making the time and coming on the show, and we'll have to talk and get you back on as soon as we're able.
That sounds great. It's been a pleasure to be on the show, Brent. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure, brother. Thanks again. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So I hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.